with dads on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with dads on the air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this 8th day of March 2011, and this is in fact International Women's Day, so we'll be having a bit more to say about the centenary of International Women's Day on this 8th day of March 2011. This is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me today, Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning everybody.
And Phil York from Dads in Distress.
G'day, g'day.
So, dealing with International Women's Day, I might just give you a little potted history of what's happened on this day. It all got moving back in 1908 when there was a march through New York of 15,000 women demanding shorter hours, better pay and voting rights. Then in 1909, in accordance with a declaration by the Socialist Party of America, the first National Women's Day, that was National Women's Day, was observed across the United States on the 28th of February. And then in 1910, there was a second international conference of working women held in Copenhagen. And the conference of over 100 women from 17 countries representing unions, socialist parties, working women's groups, and including the first three women elected to the Finnish parliament, greeted a suggestion by Clara Zetkin that International Women's Day be set up. And then in 1911, following the decision agreed at Copenhagen in 1911, International Women's Day was honoured for the first time in Austria, Denmark, Germany and Switzerland on the 19th of March. In 1914, on the eve of World War I, Russian women observed the first International Women's Day on the last Sunday in February 1913, and then following discussions, the day was transferred to the 8th of March, and this day has remained the global date for International Women's Day ever since. And in 1914, further, women across Europe held rallies to campaign against the First World War and to express women's solidarity. So the day has continued since then, and looking at the period, say, since 2000, in some countries, International Women's Day has the equivalent status of Mother's Day, where children give small presents to their mothers and grandmothers. And it is an official holiday in places like Afghanistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Burkina Faso, Cambodia, China, that's for women only, Cuba, Georgia, Guinea-Bissau, Eritrea, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Laos, Madagascar, and a few other, Nepal, Russia, Turkmenistan, Uganda, Uzbekistan, Vietnam and Zambia.
And damn lucky that it is only women getting the day off on International Women's Day, or none of us would be here.
So the tone of the nature of IWD has for the past few years moved from being a reminder about the negatives to a celebration of the positives, and we'll certainly be following up on that. Our guests today are Dr. Elizabeth Celli in Melbourne. Elizabeth has been on the show before, and she is a practicing psychologist and author, normally speaking about as a voice for men's health in Australia, but today we'll be focusing on the other side of her practice, on women, and particularly on this day, International Women's Day. Then we'll be crossing across the Pacific to Toronto, Canada, and we'll be speaking to Barbara Kay, who is a columnist for the National Post newspaper. So, before we get on with that, we have some local news, and Phil York from Dads in Distress is able to tell us about a new website.
G'day, Bill. Thank you very much. Yes, well, actually, it's just a revamp of the Dads in Distress website, www.dadsindistress.asn.au. We launched our new website last week, and I encourage everyone to get online and have a look. It's a great website. It's a new, fresh look, wonderfully set out, easy to navigate through. Differences, the main difference between the old website and the new website is this website is is more interactive. So you can actually join the website, and once you go through the process of joining, we'll give you quite a few different options that may interest you or may not interest you, and that way we can filter the information that we send back to you as a member of our site. We've had lots of great feedback with regard to it. As I said, it's been going for about 5 days now, but both the dads and the service providers are liking what they see.
And Phil, what's the actual address then?
Again, it's www.dadsindistress.asn.au. So yeah, you'll find lots of information as a dad. You'll find lots of stories, which I'm sure will be along the same lines as your story. You'll get to see where the groups are. There's an interactive map as to where all our groups are and contact areas in other areas of Australia. We have, copies of all types of appreciation letters, desperation letters, letters from family members that have lost fathers, sons, brothers, as a dad in distress. So, yeah, there's a lot of uplifting stuff. It's basically headlined Help and Hope for Separated Dads, and that's exactly what we do offer separated dads, is help and hope. And so hit the website, come to the meetings, and I'm sure we'll be able to support you through it.
Yeah, great new resource there for the wonderful work that Dads in Distress are doing. And you've got something?
Yeah, I've got a couple of articles here. Firstly, from the Sun Herald, under the heading The Devolution of Man, Rachel Brown has written, Australians have spent the past century outstripping their forebears in height because of better nutrition and medical care, but our steady climb up the growth charts may have come to a shuddering halt. Australian children born today might be the first generation to be slightly shorter than their parents. Many researchers believe that humans in developed countries have reached their maximum height and are starting to plateau, while some are even shrinking. A study in Germany last year showed that in the past 20 years, children have become slightly shorter. I always actually put it down to the growth hormones that they put in chicken and beef these days as to why the kids were getting taller, because I certainly noticed it in my family that my nephews especially are towering giants. They're looking down on all of us. And my son, I mean, he's 11 and he's up to my nose already. I mean, he's going to be an absolute monster. So anyways, but apparently that's all going to end soon. We've reached the limits of the maximum height we can reach, apparently. I've got another one here. This is also from the Sun Herald. Hey Babe, Time to Sleep is the headline. Once again, Rachel Brown. She writes, Australian babies and toddlers are among the most sleep-deprived in the world because of the pace of modern family life. Children aged between 12 and 24 months are getting 8 hours sleep a night, significantly less than the 10 to 12 hours a night recommended by health professionals. The findings from a survey of 1,000 Australian parents reveal that many families are struggling to balance work and domestic life, according to Professor Catherine Fowler, Chair in Child and Family Health at Parental Support Group, Treslian. The situation is worse in Sydney, says Treslian, where both parents are likely to be in the workforce and may spend hours travelling between the office and home. The Australian survey conducted last October found that only 44% of infants slept for 8 or more hours a night, compared with 75% of children in Western Europe. And now I would say this is a fairly frightening finding, because sleep deprivation, it stops you developing the higher functions, stops you growing into your hypothalamus, the light brain, stops you developing compassion and goodness, keeps you in the reptile part of your brain, where you're basically, it's all fight and flight and nasty stuff, which could have something, could explain why we've got an increase in bullying and violence, not enough sleep. So parents out there, try to make sure that your kids get more sleep. It's extremely important to their development, to the growth of their brain, and a lack of sleep, it produces Neanderthals.
Just on a local note, a local event happening in Liverpool on Thursday the 31st of this month. Federal member Chris Hayes will be coming along to the Dads in Distress group to talk with separated dads about issues that they may have with either the Child Support Agency or the Family Law Courts of Australia. So I encourage everyone who is interested to give me a call on 0401 426 101 and register your interest, and we'll take it from there. So that's on Thursday evening, the 31st of March at 7 p.m. in Liverpool.
Okay, put that down in your diaries. And we seem to have a lot of news today. We might have to come back to get through some of this after our guests. But just one note here that there's a very encouraging development in Canada. The Canadian Greens have endorsed equal parenting in their policy platform. The Green Party of Canada is a small party that has so far failed to elect anyone to Parliament. But recently, discontent with the major parties has been to the Green Party's advantage, and the party has steadily increased its share of the popular vote in both national and in both national and local elections. Sounds somewhat similar to what's happening in Australia. But politics of the Canadian Green Party are well left of centre, which makes their endorsement of equal shared parenting so important. They've, in fact, supported the bill that was proposed by Conservative MP Morris Vellacott. This is the Equal Shared Parenting Bill, known as C-422. And our listeners might remember we spoke some weeks ago to Brian Ludmer in Canada, a lawyer who was also involved in drafting that bill. And under this bill, judges are required to order equal shared parenting for divorcing parents unless it is not in the best interests of the child to do so. So effectively, it's a default position. If there are good reasons why it shouldn't be equal shared parenting, that is allowed for. But the normal situation is going to be equal shared parenting if this bill gets through the Canadian Parliament, which we can only hope. So that's an interesting development. We might see if we can follow it up with the local Greens and see if they might change their position from their current stance in this area. An article from the Sydney Morning Herald, it was published online on the 31st of December 2010, and it was reporting that a surprising number of newlyweds resort to slapping, pushing or punching their partner, and women are often the perpetrators. The study, A Relationship, Aggression, Violence and Self-Regulation in Australian Newlywed Couples, shows female violence is at least as common as male violence, with the most usual patterns being female-only violence, followed by both partners being violent. The study was led by Professor Halford, who said female violence was often trivialised, especially in films and television, where women were sometimes shown slapping a man to no detriment. But such behaviour was risky, because apart from anything else, it's usually the women who end up injured after starting one of these fights, and they then feel intimidated. His advice is, if you don't want to get hit, don't hit. It's a really bad idea for people to hit each other, regardless of their sex, because it's something we're against, all forms of violence, not just men against women, but women against men, men against children, women against children, women against women, and men against men. So we might go to a short break, and we'll be back soon with our first guest, Dr. Elizabeth Celli.
Oh, grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, this 8th day of March, International Women's Day, and we are able to welcome back to Dad's on the Air Dr. Elizabeth Celli. Elizabeth is a psychologist, author and media commentator. Her qualifications include a first-class honours degree in psychology and psychophysiology, and where she that was achieved from the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Melbourne. Elizabeth runs workshops, advocacy, clinical practices, and we've spoken to Elizabeth in the past about advertisements and the men's health. Today we're on a different tack. Elizabeth, good morning and welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, it's great to hear your voice again. Now,
thank you.
I know in the past you've chaired lunches on International Women's Day, and we've just ran through the history of the day a little bit earlier, and it seems to be taking a more positive spin now from perhaps the original or some of the ways it's portrayed. I was just wondering if you could take us through your approach on International Women's Day.
Well, it's another day to honour women in this case and the many strengths and skills and contributions that we've got to make in our very inner complex world as a woman. But the way we celebrate International Men's Day, and that's been put on the map in the last few years to honour men, this obviously happened many years ago in helping women become more visible given the history of women in society. And now another day we can celebrate and make sure we ensure it's kept healthy.
Yes, and I guess that's the risk that with the rise of with a certain type of feminism that perhaps a lot of women don't want to associate with, but where it started with a drive for equality, it now seems to be there are some elements that seem to be wanting that equality at the expense of men.
Well, it's a risk with anything associated with women and the positioning of women, and as you've rightly said, it was based on equality and women being more of a visible place given what it was like, say, 40, 50 years ago. So we do need to bear in mind, you know, the kind of what I call misguided feminists, you know, really trying to pull something out of context and making it a power game. You know, International Women's Day is about appreciating women and the strengths they have, the contributions they make. Just like International Men's Day on November 19th is purely about men, International Women's Day is purely about women. It's not about pitting women against men, especially in regard to any power over men. You know, men and women have got their own respective inner power that contributes to being their own person. So misguided feminists trying to, I guess, commandeer a day of honouring women is something both men and women need to be on alert for. So, you know, whenever we might hear women say, or misguided feminists pitting themselves against men, we need to raise a flag in our minds and instead, for men and women around other women, ask the woman what they'd like to be appreciated for so they get to reflect on themselves and what their wants and desires are. And that was part of the motivation that initiated the International Women's Day lunch in the region where I live. I was on a committee for a working group of women that work in their own businesses or as employees. They would get together often to work for support and business. And so I said, why don't we do an International Women's Day lunch so we can really honour them? And now two business chambers come together and do that annually. So today they're having their lunch to celebrate the day. So
That's good. And now, do you personally feel that you've been prejudiced in setting up your business and running your practice?
Prejudiced from?
In the sense of being a woman, do you feel that you've been disadvantaged because you're a woman as distinct from perhaps a man in that same position?
I personally and professionally don't feel I've been prejudiced. I don't necessarily look at gender barriers. I always look to upskill myself and make sure that if I'm going to be in business, there are certain skills I need to have. And if I'm weak in certain skills or limited in certain skills, I either upskill or I work with people that have those skills. So So that's involved both men and women, but I certainly haven't felt personally prejudiced in a business context. But then again, you've got to know me as well. I've got quite a determined personality. I can get quite passionate, so I only do what I'm passionate about.
And I think that's the more important thing, really, isn't it? Is if you look around the country at the moment with all the, I was speaking to a friend of mine at school, and he's a teacher at school, and he said his subject mistress was a woman, his principal was a woman, his premier was a woman, his governor was a woman, his prime minister was a woman, and his governor general is a woman, and his queen is a woman, I suppose, if you go a bit further.
Yeah.
So it seems to be at all levels.
If we just get stuck on gender and look at it as it's a woman doing it or a man doing it, we actually miss the person potentially and whatever skills and strengths they're bringing. So what I can bring as a woman, a man could also bring as his own man, but just doing it his way and vice versa. So when it comes to something like International Women's Day and how it is there to honour and appreciate women and how they do things, it's also about women appreciating themselves and honouring themselves rather than expecting others to do it just because I'm a woman. So it's not this day of you should treat me good, you should honour me and notice, you know, that I'm in this game and therefore just because I'm a woman, honour me. It feels like such a forced approach,
yes.
Whereas being able to honour and respect yourself, regardless of men and women around you and how they treat you, you honour and respect yourself, and then you learn how to relate with the people around you. So, you know, I know I probably speak for many women who are a bit sick and tired of having political ideologies and these hardcore messages about what we should be as a woman being shoved down our throat, making us feel sometimes defensive. And instead of helping us feel empowered for who we are at any moment, strengths and weaknesses, we sometimes have misguided feminists leaving us feeling inadequate and confused. And so we constantly go through a soul search, given we're entering the workforce and doing a variety of things, as to what is our contribution, how can I do this best, how can I do this without compromising myself. And there's a lot of questions in our personal space that we ask ourselves, both in our personal lives and relationships, and in particular then when we do enter the professional space, in being our true selves, in and amongst these ideologies that are shoved down our throats, making us feel as though we're not good enough, when it seems to be more the ideology making us feel worse than men, according to some of their messages. So I'm often very respected, not often, I always am very respected by the men I work with in particular.
Yes, I'm sure of that. And I noticed that you were formerly working as a qualified personal fitness trainer. In that role, and perhaps now in your current role as a psychologist, do you work with women a lot in your practice?
As a personal trainer?
Yes.
I don't currently practice as a personal trainer, but I did so for 4 to 5 years. Sorry, what was the question, Bill?
Well, just dealing with that first, did you train a lot of women in that role?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I trained both men and women. One of the gyms I worked at had a 6,000-member base, very business-oriented crowd that was there, many women working there. You know, we're all human. I didn't find there was any gender differences or issues there. I mean, the men train differently to women, obviously.
Well, perhaps did the women, when they did the physical training, did it give them a new sense of confidence, do you think?
Anything that helps someone look after themselves, body, mind and spirit, will always add to someone's confidence, as long as it's done for the right reasons and for their own health benefits, mental and physical health. So they certainly always felt better about themselves, and I'm very oriented in a holistic manner. So whether we're working through physical personal training or whether I'm working with you as a psychologist on your mental health and identity and self-image, the outcomes and the goals are typically the same: how we can improve your self-confidence and empower you through those mechanisms. So when days like this came up, like International Women's Day or a birthday or International Men's Day, it was honouring from a social level to say, hey, how can I acknowledge and appreciate you for being a woman? You know, we'll hopefully do that most days, but let's make a big deal of it today, the way I'll make a big deal of it on your birthday, for example. But in how we can utilise International Women's Day, there's some considerations we can all make as men and women if You want to talk about those?
Yes, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what more we could do in this area. I personally would greatly encourage the personal fitness training, but as a way of I think you promote as integrating psychological and physical health. But, yeah, what more can we do, do you think?
Well, I very much look at days like this as a great social avenue, relationships between people. So the way I've advocated for this on International Men's Day, and even more so because it's helping us encourage men be recognised and appreciated for who they are as human beings. For the International Women's Day, say for men or even women that have got female friends, sometimes even just asking them, did you know it's International Women's Day today, and a happy International Women's Day to you, can just open up a conversation and build a bridge between him and her or her and her, that you can get to know her a bit better. A lot of women aren't encouraged personally to really reflect on themselves and think about some of their strengths and benefits. They're all very much about giving, and sometimes giving at their own expense, that then they get resentful if it doesn't come back, and that's an expectation they didn't know they had within themselves. So sometimes on a day like this, if you're asking them, you know, if there was one thing about yourself you'd like us all to appreciate, what would it be? And a woman would be pleasantly surprised at that. You know, she might look at you a bit suspicious initially. She doesn't get asked that often. But it reminds her that it's International Women's Day and we're acknowledging you. So how can I do that for you? Help me help you. You know, what's a quirky and fun part of yourself you don't often show that we can enjoy of yourself? You know, one of my friends didn't know how much I loved to dance, so when he saw me bust a few moves when we were out socialising once, the image stuck. So now he, you know, he has a good laugh with me, but he knows something else about me that he encourages me with now. So it's, that's an honouring and an appreciating of something that's important to me as a woman. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it's great. I mean, sometimes people see something like that and they actually try to discourage it, but really, you know, it's great to draw it out.
Absolutely, you know, if you really want to see a small wrap around her head, I've no doubt that, you know, a lot of men observe things of the women around them, their friends or their partners, and see some of her quirky stuff or things that are unique to her, and they might tell a friend or just smile inside about it, going, yeah, she does that, and it just makes me smile. Communicating it to her, something that you've noticed as a character, a personality or a skill or part of her attitude you admire and respect, just letting her know can sometimes really just, you know, straighten up her shoulders and walk tall. I had a friend a few months ago just acknowledge me for some advice I must have given him a few weeks prior. He was having a concern with his partner. He wasn't sure how to handle it. I just gave him the girl perspective. I just went, oh, you know, if that was me, I'd kind of feel this and I'd feel that. And just based on that, he went off and thought about it. And what I really appreciated when he came back to me was he just let me know that he had reflected on it. He really appreciated it and he listens to my advice. So when he said that, I was a bit mute. I just went a bit shocked, with pleasure, I should say, of going, thank you for telling me that. Yeah, that would have been International Women's Day for me at that point, just because he'd communicated something of me that he noticed, and he did me the courtesy and the honour, I guess, which is how I view it, of letting me know. So I just thanked him and said, thank you for sharing that. So acknowledging it to her verbally, just for the sake of commenting her no hidden agenda, can be a prime way to celebrate International Women's Day with her. You know, just get her a funky card or a picture of something that you know she likes. Happy International Women's Day to you can be so simple and yet so powerful. One of the key things that women enjoy is some acknowledgement, basic acknowledgement of something that they do, that they're just so busy giving or doing or trying to get a grip on themselves or trying to understand how do I best function or do whatever I need to do, that they won't even acknowledge themselves sometimes. So turning the mirror onto them and saying, hey, you know, you've got this cheeky smile. You know, it's just funny. It makes me laugh when you do it. It's really endearing. Just little things like that can often, you know, spark up a woman inside and make her feel quite empowered. It's very simple and yet very powerful.
It's just one day a year when we can perhaps think of those sorts of things. And And do you find that with your women in your psychological practice, do they raise these sorts of issues with you?
What sorts of issues, Bill?
Oh, that what they're missing is that perhaps that just being noticed for being different.
Oh yes, absolutely. It's not even just about being different. It's just the literal acknowledgement. I put literal in quotation marks. You know, the small acknowledgements or appreciation for the things that she does do, because more often than not, she wants to do them. But it's the lack of just thanks for doing that, or I really appreciate the effort and time you've put into that. She does miss that gap, I've found, and often when she hears that, literally I see them melt. Yeah, it's a very woman thing.
Mm. See, we're getting some inside tips here today. This is great.
Absolutely, you're getting some inside women secrets here.
Yeah.
But I can speak for myself personally and professionally. It's an insight melt job. It's just like, oh, that's cool, thanks. And it almost strikes her dumb, so to speak, in the sense, not being able to, speechless is the word I'm looking for. It's so simple and yet so meaningful to know that he's noticed. He hasn't been overlooked or disregarded. And the only way we can kind of know that is if, A, you either verbalise it, which I know is a woman, more of a female thing to do of talking about everything, so I'm not saying men need to talk more, but sometimes the acknowledgement verbally is a very clear bridge for that, or whether it be an action, if he's more comfortable doing an action that supports what she's doing or complements it, then it's another means of showing her. Sometimes I have to say women can easily miss that, and I'm often coaching women in having a look at how he is expressing his appreciation non-verbally, because he's not always necessarily going to do it verbally.
Yes.
But, you know, on days like International Women's Day, just as a key skill to perhaps look at doing those simple acknowledgements verbally that let her know it hasn't been overlooked, because I've no doubt men have noticed. They notice. Mm. You know, they're internal contemplators, no question about it. It's just that bridge of, hey, you know, that quirky smile, or that you gave me that advice, or, you know, I want to see you bust a few moves next time we go out, because it looked like you were having fun. It's like, oh, cool. You've just noticed something about me as my own person, and that acknowledgement is enough to go, all right, I'm part of this dynamic.
Yes,
does that make sense?
Yes, and you sometimes hear men say things like, well, you know, I don't need to tell you that I love you, or something like that, but maybe they do. Maybe they should vocalise it.
Like you just said then, he might not need to tell her he loves her, and that's fair enough, but she might need and want to hear it.
Hmm.
So there's a difference. Now, his need to express it may be different to the value it holds for her to hear it. So it's not necessarily that she needs him to say it. It's that there might be a place in her, and I dislike saying need because you don't want to encourage dependency of sorts on it, but it's that it holds a lot of value for her to hear it. So even if it's not a need for her, because she has her own confidence and she knows you love her and she knows you care somewhere in your actions and over the years, or the mere fact you've been together or been friends for a while, whilst that can all be part of the course and unspoken, the value of hearing it is priceless.
Yes.
For a woman.
And
so the needs are different, and that's just part of our complementary natures as men and women.
Yes, because you know, we have to acknowledge there are differences between men and women in all sorts of areas. And
absolutely, that's a good thing.
That is a good
thing. Gosh, if we were the same, how boring would that be?
Yeah, but I think some feminists don't want to acknowledge that, and they go off down another track. But
what we need to perhaps reframe in thinking is that rather than just seeing it as a difference, it's how are we complementary to each other? Because I don't necessarily, personally or professionally, want to hang around people that do what I can do. Otherwise, how am I going to learn and grow? I will surround myself with people, and if we look at our friendship circles or professional circles, we'll tend to have people that have got strengths in areas we've got weaknesses, or where we've got strengths that they've got weaknesses in, and so we complement each other.
Mm.
And that's so much more important in our personal relationship space, in that even husbands and wives or partners looking at how he does things she can't do too well, and how she does things he can't do too well, or how they simply support each other. It's not a deficit thing. It's that, yeah, I'll get he do that because he's way better at it than me, and yeah, I'll let her do that because she's way better at it than me, and it doesn't make me any less. But we're complementing each other, and our differences become our strength.
Yes.
That sounds a bit philosophical, but it's...
Well, it's a very positive message, and it's one that, you know, that you're looking to develop. People, everyone, women included, should be looking to develop. And I just see in the paper today, the Governor-General has come out and is, well, she is a bit of a mixed message, but I think she started off saying that she wanted to reintroduce quotas for boardroom representation. Mm. Do you have a view on that?
I think quotas served a purpose in the past. I'm not so sure they serve a purpose now, because sometimes it can mean it's a numbers game as opposed to a human, what skills have you got, and women really learning to self-promote and really learning to show what their strengths and skills are. Because if there's one thing I've learnt women don't necessarily do too well is promote themselves, get out there and say they can do something, market themselves, just have a self-image that means, you know what, I've got the skills, I've got the benefits, I deserve it just as much as anyone else, rather than command and expect it by numbers. In some industries, there may be a need for it. I think you need to look by industry, potentially, for quotas, but I think they serve less of a purpose in the modern day. In the past, I think they would definitely need it. I guess if I relate something like that back to this personal acknowledgement of International Women's Day, of one thing we can do for women on the quota business front, encourage them to really know what their skills and assets are, what they do offer, and learn the skills to promote themselves rather than just be noticed as they sit in the back of the room, so to speak. Actually be at the forefront for yourself. You are your own best advocate. You know, no one else is going to market you better than you. So get out there and let people know, because if you actually don't let them know, how are they going to know?
Yes.
They need to know from you. You can be your best salesperson. On the personal front, this is something like International Women's Day, on top of the other things I mentioned before that it'd be lovely to do for her, is really encourage her to do something for herself, you know, that lifts her spirits and helps her give to herself and honour herself, so that she's not only practising that skill, but she's sensing she's getting permission from the people around her. Because in the internal woman's world, she often won't give herself that permission. Men are great at doing this for themselves. Women are crap at doing it for themselves. So men can really be good teachers in encouraging women to go and do something for yourself that lifts your spirit and helps you honour you. And I'm happy to see you go and do that.
But of course, it's a matter of starts with, you know yourself, and I suspect...
It's a matter of what, sorry?
It starts with know yourself, and I
yes.
suspect that perhaps a lot of women, quite sensibly, in some people's minds, don't want to be chained to the office and working long hours and gradually climbing up that ladder to finally get a board position. And I think some of them are very sensible and thinking, no, that's not for me. I've got another life and I don't want to be on the board.
It's quite an issue for women in the professional world, in that they may have the energy and the drive and want to do that, but they're also then competing with an important element that has just as much drive of the nurturing and the caring and family raising or childbearing for many, that, you know, they still have that as a goal. And how you can reconcile doing all of that without the risk of the superwoman syndrome, which ultimately drives women into the ground because they expect too much for themselves and think they can be superwoman, which is just basically unrealistic. So there's many women I help get a bit more realistic as to what they're expecting of themselves and where their priorities actually are. And that's part of the battle I was talking about earlier, how we as women, you know, really reflect and evaluate for ourselves how we do something. It's very different in the sense of running my own business. How do I reconcile the professional demands and my competitive and ambitious drive and the passion that I do have in my field of the men's advocacy with my personal life, with my friends, relationship, and other personal considerations. So there it is, a constant reflection for us to make. And when we're getting so many external messages of you can be anything you want, you can do anything you want, and if you don't, you're failing. Well, while that's not the direct message, there's an indirect message sometimes there from some misguided ideologies. It becomes quite confusing for a woman.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, we're speaking with Dr. Elizabeth Celli. Elizabeth, your practice is Quality Living. Is that the name of your practice?
That's the name of my website, qualityliving.com.au, and there will be a second one coming out in a month or so as we're finalising that.
Oh, great. But
at the moment, there's some resources on there in terms of reading about lifestyle and health and fitness and some of the men's health needs. If men want to review some of the TV and they're here and there, there's hopefully some great learning and support that they can gauge from that. And, of course, access to ordering my book, if you want, on the website.
And the book is called Regular Joe versus Mr. Invincible.
Yep, The Battle for the True Man. So I interviewed six Aussie men in that book and talked to them about similarly the different roles that men play and the changes that have come about for them as the family man, as the provider, in relationships, intimacy, sexual, as well as being a mentor or a role model. And so we discussed all those various hats men can wear but sometimes don't quite recognise for themselves. So that's a read with a lot of words from men for men, if that's something they want to utilise as a tool in getting to know themselves.
Yes, I could recommend that book. It's in
thank you.
It's in your local library, I'm sure. Regular
off
Joe.
Off the website, actually, Bill.
Or off the website, even better.
Yeah, qualityliving.com.au.
Yes, Regular Joe versus Mr. Invincible. And and the website, yes, Quality Living. So, Elizabeth, I think we're running out of time, but we're very grateful for you, particularly today. I know you're very busy on this International Women's Day, so thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for asking. It's great to be speaking about how we can honour and celebrate women.
We appreciate it. So that's a real achiever in Australia, Dr. Elizabeth Celli. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Okay, bye. Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, this 8th day of March, International Women's Day. And I'm very pleased to say that we have on the line Barbara Kay. Barbara is a columnist for the National Post newspaper in Toronto, and she is hailed as having written the best essay ever on this topic of women's rights. So, Barbara, welcome and good morning.
Hi, Bill. Nice to be with you.
It's great to hear your voice. And now, Barbara, you've got International Women's Day coming up tomorrow. We're actually celebrating it today, but I know you've got some strong views on feminism and how it perhaps it's taking over on International Women's Day and something we should be guarding against.
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because yes, my newspaper is running a whole week-long series on the subject of International Women's Day, and many of our regular columnists and as well some invited columnists are getting their thoughts on paper for the subject. So we've already heard from several of them. My column will appear on Wednesday, and I just wrote it today, and it my column is dealing with the fact that feminism, the more radical variety of feminism, is really on its way out. I know it doesn't appear that way because the lingering effects, the trickle-down effects of radical feminism still permeate the culture, but I do see changes, and I do see some interesting developments as a result of Sarah Palin's entry into politics, and that's the subject of my column for this Wednesday. Socially conservative women are now going into politics at a greater rate. I don't know about in Australia, but in America, many conservative women have been winning seats in Congress. They have been winning the governorships of several states. And they have followed Sarah Palin's lead. They have become much more political and aggressive about turning back the tide of radical feminism. So that's the subject of my column. And so I do see some changes.
Yes, well, that's very topical, and we'd certainly be interested in Australia in some of those comments because we're in a situation where all our leaders, in the state where I am, going right up to the head of state, are in fact women. So some conservative, some left of centre, a bit of a mixture, but it's certainly a change.
Well, I think it's a great thing that women should go into politics, and of course with all their various views, but the difference between the conservative women and the liberal women is that the liberal women that go into politics go into politics with the idea that their mandate is to work for women. And the conservative women that go into politics have the idea that they're working for their country. And that includes everybody. And they do not focus only on women's issues. They focus on what they think is best for the nation. And that's what's happening in the United States right now, is you're getting women who are not typical. Typical of the feminist movement. They're not women coming out of New York or Los Angeles and the pricey Ivy League universities, and they're not in that little elite, academic bubble. These are women that are businesswomen. They're techies. They come from small business backgrounds. They're more interested in reducing the deficit and seeing governance issues addressed, and so they are realistic women, very comfortable in their skin as both women, mothers, wives, and the main thing that I see is that these socially conservative women do not blame men for the problems, that we face. They see men and women as collaborative rather than adversarial. And they feel that the nation's problems are not about gender, but about governance.
Well, this is a very positive move, I think. I've been hoping for that the pendulum might start swinging back, because originally International Women's Day was aimed at an equality between the sexes, and then it seems to have been hijacked by the feminists in the meantime, and now, from what you're saying, there may be actually a swing back to...
I do see that, Bill. If you look at what's happening, if you want to see what's happening in the women's movement, you have to look at the universities and look at the women's studies programs. These were programs that were bursting at the seams 15 years ago. They're now, those classrooms have emptied out. There are universities all across Canada that are actually closing down their women's studies departments. Some of the women's studies departments are now calling themselves gender studies in a sort of desperate, effort to attract men into the courses and to pretend that they are, neutral and no longer recruitment centers for ideologues. But the fact is that the revolution is over, but the effects of the revolution linger on, and they linger on in family court and in the domestic violence industry.
Yes.
And in all the familiar places that you've talked about so much.
Yes, I think you described it that family law has been colonized by feminists, and that's certainly the case in Australia and other places that I hear about around the world. I think you've quoted a figure, 90% of contested custody case suits in Canada, the woman gets has the custody.
Yes, there's no question that family court is really one of the more difficult and the more rigid and really firmly entrenched institutions in which feminism has definitely colonized that entire institution. Again, I do see glimmers of hope even there, because in the past couple of years here, we have seen, for example, judges ruling on parental alienation syndrome, accepting it as a valid syndrome and applying it to their custody cases, and even in a few cases removing children from the custody of the mother because she has been alienating the children. Doesn't happen very often, but you have to look at every candle lit in the darkness. But you're quite right. This is an institution that is going to be very difficult to turn around because, judges are on the bench for a very long time, and those that have been trained and so-called sensitized by feminist psychologists and social workers and all that, it's going to be very hard to turn that around in a big way. Still, I see that the issue has got some traction, and that the people, for example, politicians, are not unaware of it. We have gained their attention, so they are looking for openings. Right, in Canada, an equal parenting bill has been, put forward as a private member's bill.
Yes, that's C-422.
Yeah, it hasn't passed because, it keeps getting shoved off the table every time there's an election or Parliament gets prorogued or something. But the fact that it's out there, and it does have quite a bit of a support, within the government, I think eventually it will pass.
Oh, that's the good. Well, talking about the judges, and in America it's perhaps even harder than here because the judges are elected, I think, over there. And,
yes, many of them are. I'm not sure about the family court judges, if they are elected or appointed, but it doesn't matter because, all legal students now, all law students are kind of marinated in the same traditions. So it's going to take a while because the university is the last bastion of, politically correct feminism and that. So they're sort of fighting a rearguard action. Real people, ordinary people, are voting with their feet. They don't want to hear about radical feminism anymore. But the institutions are still, they're still riddled with these outmoded and antiquated theories.
Yes, in Australia we find that some of these government-funded bodies are really, I suppose we'd say, they're punching above their weight because the politicians are scared of them. of doing anything that might be seen as, say, you know, no one would ever be game to say anything against, say, White Ribbon Day, and yet, if you go out into the broader community, I think most people, including women, would say that they want to have a fairer family law system.
Well, they do. They do. I mean, look, when you look at polls, I think in Canada we had a poll regarding equal parenting, and I believe it was something like 80% of people said it made absolute sense to have equal parenting. You're also right when you say that politicians are afraid of feminists because they are so well organized. However, again, you know, we've got to look at the glimmers of light, right?
Yes.
Our government, for example, stopped funding a program that was blatantly sexist. It was supposed to help underprivileged or victims, you know, people of disadvantaged groups, to fight for their rights under the charter and to pay for their legal fees. But it really was a very feminist organization that would only help politically correct groups or people, and the government withdrew their funding and said, that's it, that program is over. That was a very big step, because that program was highly funded and was in itself very much responsible for allowing feminist groups to have a free ride getting their cases heard and fighting battles that then became entrenched in law. So that in itself was a good step forward.
Yes, and speaking of good steps forward, previously there've been it's been commented on how there are no shelters for domestic violence for men. Has that position improved at all in Canada?
Not really. I would say that is a very tough nut to crack. In fact, that is one area in which very little progress has been made altogether. You hear the same stupid statistics, the wrong, corrupt data, corrupt statistics. You hear it all the time, and it seems that, governments, to curry favor with women, constantly announcing new funding for new programs and sending out the message that only women are victims of domestic violence, and posting terrible ads on, I don't know if you've seen the latest Amnesty International ad.
No.
It's quite disgusting. It says, one out of five women is in bed with an abuser. Mm. And then they show a picture of a husband and wife sitting in bed reading, like, a very ordinary-looking couple. And the implication is that one in five ordinary people, somebody their husband is a violent man. He may look totally ordinary, but he's quite violent. This is a dreadful a kind of group accusation that would not be allowed for any other group. It's like saying, well, one out of five Muslims is a jihadi, and then showing a picture of, some Muslim grocery store owner, selling fruit to somebody and implying that he's plotting to overturn the government, in his off hours.
Yes, I mean, that's particularly pernicious because it's portraying someone in an ordinary scene and making people suspicious of people in an ordinary scene and in their everyday life, isn't it?
It's a group slander. It's a group slander. It's like it's really trying to send the message that the most ordinary-looking guy, someone who you would normally feel safe with, is not safe, is not secure. I find this shocking and slanderous, and I do wonder, what bothers me about these ads, I've seen them before, is that men do not object to them.
Yes.
They don't write letters. They won't write letters to Amnesty International. They won't withdraw their funding. They won't say, look, withdraw that ad or you'll never see another cent. I mean, I stopped funding. I stopped sending money to Amnesty International because of that and because of other political reasons. They're highly politicized on many issues. But men have to... they have to take steps. They must not be passive about these slanders.
Yes, well, you personally have been very outspoken. Have you suffered at all from perhaps the feminists in the world for taking the...
Well, I mean, how can I suffer? They write me stupid letters, or they call me terrible names, or they, you know, are very shrill in their denunciations of me. Well, they aren't the kind of people that would have been my friends anyways, and so no, I wouldn't say I suffered at all, and in fact, I consider that I have gained because... I have friends like you.
You certainly do.
Well, that to me is a plus, and I don't count the loss of, you know, these strident feminists, the loss of their respect as any, you know, big loss at all.
Yes, I mean, and there are certainly a lot of very good people working in this area, but... I mean, if I were you speaking as a woman, it just surprises me that some women want to go along with being treated as victims and as you know, needing particular care or help or laws.
Yes.
And things. I mean, you know, why can't they get out there and do it themselves?
Well, the thing is, they want it both ways. They do get out and do it themselves. They're doing it very well. You know, they're the majority on campus. They have the best jobs. Women are doing very well. Western women are doing extremely well. But they paint themselves as victims when it is convenient to. And I agree. I think it's very undignified. And that's why I'm very interested in this new wave of political women who do not see themselves as victims and who don't even see themselves as kind of obsessed with their own sex. And that's because they don't see themselves in a power struggle with men. They see themselves in a cooperative
partnership
kind of relationship to men, which is how it should be. And by the way, the first, you know, if we're speaking of the long history of the women's International Women's Day, if you go back 100 years, the first, you know, the suffragettes who campaigned to get the vote and their rights, as well they should have, these were not women who were also wishing to have abortions and to be promiscuous and all the other things. They were very proud of their status as wives and mothers, and they wanted to continue to be wives and mothers, and but they wanted to bring their daughters up as equal under the law.
Yes.
So the first suffragettes were very much like what I see Sarah Palin as. Extremely independent women with lots of spunk and lots of, you know, individuality, but also women who saw, who kind of gloried in their own biology and who didn't repudiate it or who weren't disgusted by the claims of nature on them. They were proud to be mothers and they were happy to have men being men and women being women. So, in fact, I think what we are seeing in this new Sarah Palin moment, if you will, is a kind of return to the origins of feminism as a reform movement and
yes.
not as a revolution.
Yes, we're speaking with Barbara Kay, columnist for the National Post newspaper in Toronto. And Barbara, you mentioned Sarah Palin. We're a long way away from what's going on over there, but is she still very much in the news? She seems to have sort of quieted down a bit.
Oh, yes, she's all over the place.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you... I mean, I don't know if she's going to run for the presidency in 2012, but she is extremely active, giving speeches all over the country, and I'm sure that in Australia, news of the Tea Party has... sort of made the news on more than one occasion. Are you familiar with the Tea Party?
Yes, we hear quite a bit about the Tea Party.
Fine, okay. Well, Sarah Palin is a big heroine of the Tea Party, and she, you know, the Tea Party, an interesting fact about the Tea Party is that 55% of the Tea Party population are women. And not only that, but leaders of the Tea Party, the organizers and the state coordinators, a majority of those are also women. So these are women who are very much interested in seeing smaller government, more self-reliance, independence, families being served rather than, you know, women alone, or gays, or natives, or you. I mean, they want to see the family as the center. of public life and the center of the government's concern, because strong families make for a strong society. So these women are having a huge influence on American politics, and I think something like 70 to 80% of them are anti-abortion. This issue is not going away, you know, and it's women who are making sure that it doesn't go away. So I find that rather impressive.
Yes, well, it's certainly timely, because I note the birth rates in Canada have gone down to something like 1.54 per woman, and even China is higher
than... Yes, it's a terrible problem in all Western countries. Mm. We're not as perhaps as badly off as certain European countries, but in the West, in Canada, we have 100,000 abortions a year, I think. Now, that's a huge number. I myself am not against the right to abortion under certain circumstances. I'm not one of these abortion never people. But it has become, from something that was supposed to be infrequent and something undertaken with grave concern for, you know, the ethics of what they were doing, abortion has now become a kind of, you know, form of birth control.
Yes.
And this is, by the way, the one issue which feminists, you know, you can't call yourself a feminist if you want to even go near the abortion law and to put, I mean, we in Canada do not have an abortion law at all. There are no restrictions on abortion whatsoever, and anyone who tries to bring it up is immediately shot down. You know, it's the kiss of death for any politician to go near this subject.
Mm.
But in the United States, it's quite different. You know, there is a tremendous popular revulsion against this, and it goes along with the whole movement and the whole social conservative movement to make families the center of governments, to privilege families, because they create a healthy, a robust society, and one that is actually growing in population. I believe the U.S. at their reproduction rate is something like 2.2, which is a true reproduction rate, and is the only Western country, I believe, that has a sustenance level reproduction rate, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, well, and that's the other end of it. Whereas this very high abortion rate, which I think nearly everyone would have to say is whether you support the woman's right in some situations, but it's definitely not the best way of birth control. Barbara, we're unfortunately getting near the end of the time, and there's so much to talk about. But look, it's wonderful to have you on the program again, and to talk about these issues, particularly on International Women's Day. So we'd like to, if we could invite you to come back again in the future, because it's always interesting to hear about the latest news. And perhaps could you tell us, our listeners, just where they should go for your columns?
Oh, well, thank you for that opportunity. Yes, all my columns are collected on my website at www.barbarak.ca, or if you Google me with the National Post or even the National Post's blog, fullcomment.com, fullcomment, one word. I do a lot of blogging on the Post's opinion blog, too. And thanks for allowing me to inject that little note.
No,
it's always a pleasure to be with you, and I hope you will invite me back. It's a real honor for me to know that I'm talking to people so far away and in a country that so intrigues me.
Well, you'll have to come and visit, but you're always...
I would love to.
Always
so
your sensible comments. We'll try and get you over here. But Barbara Kay, and it's, I'll just spell it, it's K-A-Y. Thank you very much once again for being on the program, and all the best with your future work.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Barbara.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Make it easier on you now. You got someone to blame. You
leave a bad taste in your mouth. You act like you never had the, and you want me to go without. Well, it's too late tonight to drag the past out into the light. We're one, but we're not the same. We need to carry each other, carry each other.
In distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. We'd like to make a special thank you to our guests today on International Women's Day, Dr. Elizabeth Celli speaking to us from Melbourne, and Barbara Kay speaking to us from Toronto, Canada, with an international perspective on feminism and developments with International Women's Day. So it's been a very interesting show. If you'd like to hear it again, like to check those interviews, don't forget it'll be on our website in the next 24 to 48 hours, which is www.dadsontheair.net. And in the meantime,
it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
We'll see you all next week.
We're dads on the air.